be all right, be all right. Well, my mama told me everything's gonna be all right. Yeah, my mama told me everything's gonna be all right. Yes, she did. My mama told me everything's gonna be all right. Be all right, be all right. Well, when you feel down and out, everything's gonna be all right, yeah. When you feel down and out, everything's gonna be all right. Don't you know when you feel down and out, everything's gonna be all right. Be all right, be all right. Everything's gonna be all right. Got a feeling everything's gonna be all right. Oh, I got a feeling everything's gonna be all right. Be all right. Be all right.
The music for tonight's show was chosen by Heather. That's music by Mortonette. Why'd you choose that, Heather?
Sherry, you know, she's a wonderful friend of the show. Friend of your student of yours and friend of yours, long time. She's fresh off the tour Wild Woman Blues. She's worked with a lot of great singer-songwriters like Elton John, Linda Ronstadt, Kenny Loggins, and a lot more, and I think she's wonderful.
And why did you choose that particular cut?
It's a Wonderful Life. Or Everything's Going to Be All Right. Yes. I'm happy and upbeat.
You're right. And it's from a special album that she did for our open house.
In which she performed live here at the school.
Yeah, and we've been telling people about that for months, about 2 weeks ago, and we're still rolling in that aftermath of an incredible party.
It was great. And you know, if the people are interested in finding out more about Mortonette, she has a website, and that is www.mortonette.com. And let me spell that for you. MortonEtte.com.
Well, this is Vocal Profiling Live on BBS Radio. Thank you for joining us. And on this show, we ask people to call in and give us a sample of their voice. And from the frequencies in their voice, your real personality comes through, and we can tell things about you, like nutrients you need and why you can't lose weight. We've been concentrating on that one. But tonight we're going to concentrate on autism, ADD, and using vocal prints to look at something called methylation. Tall Blonde Heather, you just heard her, is here with us tonight. And we have an exceptional guest, Chris Cordes. He's the father of a special child and is going to talk to us about his journey with ADD in his child. But Heather has a few announcements before we start.
Okay, we've got some very special classes. I call them special because they are for our BBS listeners at no charge if you contact us. They are one-hour preview classes where you get to spend a whole hour with Sherry, and she explains to you about our program and how it's really the cutting edge of what's going on in today's healthcare. Where will you be when today's healthcare system falls down? Hopefully you'll be with us. And our next preview class is upcoming. It'll be next Wednesday on April the 9th from 6 to 7 p.m., and that's Eastern Standard Time. And that's filling up fast, so if you're interested, you can call the office at 740-698-9119 or just shoot me an email, heather@vocalprofiling.com, and I'll make sure to get you signed up. And we have an additional one this month, and that will be on April the 30th from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
You know, Heather, people have been saying to us, you know, this was a free thing. We just thought it was some kind of come-on or something. And then they get here, and we do their vocal print for them, and they're astounded.
They are. It's, you know, I can't think of one time where the people, once they had their report in their hand, they just weren't amazed by the results. They're like, oh, my gosh. You know.
And I think it's because we want to give away this information to people because we want everybody to have it. But since it's free, people think there's some kind of trick to it, and there really isn't. Those preview classes are just what we say they are. They're to show you what's possible with vocal profiling and bioacoustics. Any more announcements?
Well, are we opening up the phone lines tonight for a free vocal profile live on the air?
We can, but let's ask them to hold off until we talk to Chris a little bit, and then they can call in.
Okay. And I'm glad you're doing this topic tonight, because I know it's a huge topic with a lot of the United States. You know, I read a statistic today. How was it? Like one in every 150 live births are children that have autism. And maybe it's different from that. But I thought that was astounding fact.
That's incredible. And we did some research today on a 35-year-old autistic man.
Mm-hmm.
And just came up with some incredible information that we're going to share later on in the show. But before we actually start the show, I want to tell people two things. One, they can now purchase the BioDiet program, what we've been doing all these profiles about on the air and telling people why they have problems with weight. We've made that finally available for the public.
For the public, which is wonderful.
So it's called BioDiet. Do you have that up on the website yet, Heather?
I've got a little bit of blurb about that. I'm working on some more information as we speak.
So it's Nutrisound.com?
Brand new.
Is there any on the information on the BBS site about it?
Working on that, too, as we speak.
Put that up.
Yes.
The other thing that we'd like to do is when people call in for their appointment with us, if they'll join Skype, SKYPE.com, and it's really easy to do. If they'll join Skype, they can watch us do it right on the air. Well, it'll be not on the air. I mean, tonight they could do that if they wanted to. But we're mostly talking about people who call during the week to get their profiles done. The BioDiet program, so you're going to have all of that up by the end of the evening?
That will be up, information. And we already have a form filled out if you're interested in being part of our study, our diet study. That is actually on Nutrisounds.com and also on our show information page on BBS Radio.
Okay, thank you, Heather. Chris Cordes, you're with us, aren't you, on the line?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on the show. And you were at the party, the open house. What'd you think? That we've talked to people about this for a long time, the conference?
Yes, you know? Well, the open house was one part of the conference for me, and it was an amazing experience. The whole week was an amazing experience.
You're a new bioacoustic practitioner, and you became a practitioner primarily to help your son. Tell us about that situation.
My son Ethan is 6.5 years old, and he. He has many health challenges, some of which we noticed very early on. And as we started to realize what those were and then try to figure out how to address them, we quickly started running into uphill battles with the first line of defense for us was the traditional medical establishment, going to our, family doctor type MD or pediatrician. And we started realizing that really wasn't getting us anywhere and wasn't going to be helpful, to our initial surprise. And
they just don't know how to
more,
deal with it.
What's that?
They just don't know how to deal with it.
They don't have training. They haven't had training, in this area. And oftentimes if you, so you're maybe suggesting things or maybe they become defensive then. So it is complicated. So as we started to learn more about these, variety of symptoms and so forth, the place that they fit or where we found people that had them, where we had the most in common, was with the autistic community. And the autism spectrum, which today, as Heather was saying, the CDC here in this country, their official number is 150, one out of 150 now, which is very high. There was just a study, I just saw the headline, so I haven't looked at it, within the last couple days, saying that in the UK and Ireland, the headline was 1 out of 58. And just a couple years ago, the CDC said 1 out of 162, and about 15 years ago, it was 1 out of 10,000. So in a very short period of time, the rate of increase is quite alarming.
Do you have any speculation as to why that's come about?
Well, yes, we have speculation and some data. There's no definitive answer, and it's quite controversial right now, because the traditional view is that being put forth by the CDC and by many of the established groups that are funding research is that they believe that it's a genetic disorder, which they need to research the cause of that, and that's the primary factor. And there are things like better diagnosis or a more inclusive diagnosis that contribute to this higher increase.
We should let people know that the CDC is the Center for Disease Control that keeps all the statistics about health and disease in the U.S.
Yes, and they also, my understanding is that they also decide and then decide on what the vaccines, which vaccines should be, that they recommend or mandate. And so over the last number of years, there has been more data and research from outside groups, and people are looking at a range of things. People think that this autism spectrum disorder, that there are a range of issues, and so not every kid has the same balance of issues, but some are having viral overload, which vaccines are a source of some live viruses, bacterial imbalances. There are a lot of gut issues and imbalances which maybe even are starting in the gut and then are affecting the brain. Heavy metal toxicity is something which seems to be pretty common across the board. So there are a lot of factors, and people that are emerging are proponents of a more holistic view are looking at that big picture and what is the burden on the immune system. And for instance, with the vaccines as one source of exposure, Ethan did receive vaccines. And he, in 2001 and 2002, and at that time, the amount of mercury, for instance, that he was exposed to was very high. And they did remove much of, they made some statements about removing a lot of the mercury from the vaccines, and that's happening slowly over time. But even today, it's still there. But if you look at what that total burden is on the immune system, maybe that pushes some people over the edge, in that if your immune system is not able to respond, whether it's from a vaccine or a live viruses, and however you've encountered them, if your immune system is not able to mount that appropriate response and then develop immunity, you're seeing chronic issues that are developing and being a burden on the immune system.
When you took Ethan to the doctors and they couldn't help, did they seem to be apologetic or say, try this, or they just told you that it was in your imagination, nothing was wrong with your child? What'd they tell you?
They would tell us that there's nothing wrong, ignore it, all kids throw up. Ethan was allergic to the casein. The first thing that we learned about Ethan was that if he had any dairy, which we now know the casein protein particularly, or we know that thing for sure. If he has any casein, within about 60 seconds, he'll begin vomiting.
That's pretty severe.
So we actually think that has been very helpful for him, because with all the autistic kids today, if you talk to mothers in the community, families, one of the things you'll hear immediately, try the gluten-free casein-free diet. Step zero, try the gluten-free casein-free diet. And so we feel fortunate with Ethan that he was not exposed to a lot of the excitotoxins present in gluten and casein because we learned so early, I mean, he vomits, so we knew, we didn't know what was going on, but we knew that wasn't good.
Did he have a rack and some mother's milk too?
No, he did not. No, he did not vomit with that.
So just cow's milk.
Just cow's milk. So then they told us to use soy. He was breastfed. There were a couple complications early on, but he was breastfed. But then when we started the formula, they said soy formula. So we used soy formula for a while, which today we feel wasn't necessarily very good either. When he did start to eat solid food, when he was born, he was in the 85th percentile for height and weight, roughly. And then he started sliding down. So we were going the wrong way. And as you're starting to eat solid food, he was throwing up more and more. And we got responses like, well, all kids throw up. He was in the grocery store going down the aisle and you'd throw up. So the kind of the standard thing was that they were, the standard view was, well, wait until you go below the minimum threshold, and then we'll take some kind of drastic action.
Oh, so wait till it gets critical, and then we'll think about doing something.
Right.
That must have been incredibly frustrating.
So that's when, we started investigating other testing. We did some IgG food sensitivity testing, which showed IgG antibodies to like 26 foods. And
yeah, that's aminoglobulin, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And we then we avoided those foods, and he stopped throwing up, and things started to get better. So that's how we began with a very restricted diet, or being very that was the starting point for becoming very conscious of everything that we eat.
Does he have leaky gut?
Yes, we have documented intestinal permeability.
Okay.
So the mainstream view, even on that IgG test, is that, well, those are you get false positives, they're not reliable, you're wasting your time and your money. But for us, it was a success.
This was conventional or unconventional?
Well, if you go to the pediatrician, it's kind of borderline. It's not in the strict, your standard doctor's probably not going to suggest that, I don't think.
Did he start to come out of it then?
Well, today he's very sensitive. So today our biggest issue on a logistical basis is that we have to, my wife, Andrea, she makes all the food. So we're conscious of every ingredient in all the food. And that's, it's very difficult. There's a lot of work. If we don't travel very much, if we do travel, we bring all of our food. So you have to make the food that you're eating that day and making the food preparing for when you're going to be traveling.
Are any of your other children affected?
We have one other son, Elliot, who is younger, and Elliot does appear to have some sensitivity to milk. He doesn't have much exposure, but when he does, we've seen a little bit of a rash, eczema type rash, but he doesn't have any of the severity or the issues that Ethan does. With Elliot, he did not receive any vaccinations.
Oh, okay. So there's a big difference. I want to talk about vaccinations a little bit later, but I'd like you to share with the audience the other things that you tried outside of the conventional realm trying to get help for Ethan.
Sure. Part of the issue with that we found with Ethan is that, some doctors would say, well, there's nothing wrong, or they would just look at one little thing, and no one would look at Ethan, at the person, and at the whole picture. So Ethan has the food allergies, as we mentioned, the leaky gut, lack of muscle development and coordination was an issue. The eczema was early on, an allergic-type reaction. Asthma, which is... sometimes it's not usually a problem, but we were I want to say almost thrown out, but it was the traditional doctor wanted us to go on asthma medication every day for the rest of his life, and we didn't feel that was was really in the best interest of his immune system. A lot of sensory issues, tactically defensiveness, difficulty with loud noises, doesn't like to flush the toilet. If he washes his hands, very sensitive to hot water. So even if the water's lukewarm, he'll start screaming, and you think, oh, the water's hot, and you touch it, and it's just lukewarm. So some strange perception issue with the temperature.
Have you looked at his histidines and histamines?
Yes, they're pretty high. Usually.
Yeah, because that makes a child, well, makes anyone real sensitive.
Yes.
To hot and cold and noises and toxins and everything.
They're lower than they used to be. Then we had a speech delay. We stopped the vaccinations. You know, we started figuring out and thinking and reflecting, and we had the hand flapping that some of the kids have. And then speech was delayed. And again, with boys, a speech delay is not really a big concern. But then when he did start speaking, they called it dyspraxia, which was a difficulty formulating the motor plan. So he would know what to say, he would know what he wanted to say, but he would have trouble formulating the motor plan to do so. So table, he would say Babel, because repeating the B consonant is an easier motor plan. Or Teresa would be Ia, so simplifying that motor plan. Today his speech is much better. A lot of speech therapy and speech work and exercises, and most people just kind of take that for granted that you develop that. But we had to explicitly work on that. And then that motor planning also seems to be generalized too. Today handwriting is very difficult. We're seeing improvements, but handwriting is a difficult area. It used to be that when he would fall, we haven't tested this in a while, but when he would fall, rather than, when you imagine you're falling, you put your hands out to break the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't do that. He would just hit his head.
Mm.
So we got all these different issues, and I probably forgot some. And they all kind of add up. But when you go to one doctor, they're just looking at one thing, and they're saying, well, use these drugs. And you're thinking, well, maybe his liver couldn't handle that, or maybe that wouldn't be so great.
Taken all together, they still told you there's nothing going on here?
Right, yeah.
Heather and Chris, we have something called a green sheet, which has on it lists of amino acids that help with histamine when they're too high. If people write to you, Heather, can
Absolutely.
You give them a copy?
I would be happy to.
So just heather@vocalprofiling.com, and you'll send them out that sheet. So if there's other parents who have this issue with this extreme sensitivity, they can use this chart to see what they might want to do about that. Okay, Chris, go ahead.
Then I started thinking, well, does he really have, 10 completely disparate things? Or are there a couple fundamental issues that are manifesting with these different symptoms? And then with the help or the, discussions with some, there are a couple local doctors that we found who we really have a great working relationship with and are, more open-minded or holistic, functional medicine, taking a broader scope and more time looking at the person. And that's what led us, into this autistic area and looking at that a lot of the autistic kids, high degrees of asthma, a lot of food allergies, a lot of the same kind of issues. And it was recommended to us to start, to start some chelation, some kind of stronger chelation. And I was concerned about that at that point, that his immune system, might not be able to handle that or what would happen. And so we didn't do that. And then we were moving on that path. And then we got to one of the things that we found that has been very useful is this work. In the autism community, there's a general term called these DAN, Defeat Autism Now doctors, and that's a general term for doctors and pediatricians that are many of whom or some of whom have autistic children themselves and are looking at the whole person and saying, well, you do have this bacterial imbalances, let's try to address those, or these fungal problems, let's address that. And using these, you know, a variety of therapies to help the body and the immune system. And a subcategory of that is a woman that we have been working with who's not a medical doctor, but is a medical researcher and a biochemist and microbiologist, Dr. Amy Yasko, and she has really been pioneering work in a body process called methylation and its impact on the body, and has devoted her life today to helping autistic children, to helping families and these kids, and then helping kids, and then with her research, hopefully getting to the point where maybe it can, you know, we can learn about this and prevent having so many kids. But her work with methylation is really important beyond autism, but especially for this community. And
can you explain that term, Chris?
Sure.
Methylation?
The reason that Amy decided to focus on this thing called methylation is because it's something that we all do in our bodies. My understanding is 1 billion times each second. So we have methyl groups in our bodies, a carbon and 3 hydrogen atoms, and we exchange those. So it's like a catalyst for a variety of processes that happen in our body. And if you have impairments or if that starts to slow down, imagine the gears stop spinning and things grind to a halt. So we use methylation as required in order for DNA synthesis, for DNA regulation for your DNA and regulating viral DNA, for myelinating and pruning your nerves, for proper immune system functioning, for membrane fluidity. It's required for proper methylation. Is required for detoxifying arsenic and selenium. Required for producing melatonin. Many of the autistic kids have difficulty sleeping, and if you can't methylate your serotonin, then you don't have the melatonin, which is correlated with sleeping, and it also affects your neurotransmitter levels.
From what I understand, when methylation goes, the whole system just can't prepare anything in the body for use. It can't take care of itself. I can't even think of an analogy of how important this is.
Yes. So
go ahead.
So what we've done, the way that we've been employing that is through, which just made so much sense to me when I started to learn about this. One of our frustrations with we'd see different doctors and do different tests and some were good and some weren't, but you'd get a test and you'd get a value and then maybe they'd say do this and then you wouldn't know did it work or not work or what are you doing or what do you do next or how does this relate to something else. And the way that we started working with this methylation was by monitoring the biochemistry, taking urine amino acid tests and metabolic analysis profile urine testing and a variety of others. And so getting baseline data, monitoring that over time, measuring things like the histamine and histidine levels, like you mentioned. So really kind of using that data, getting a snapshot, and then the other work that Amy has really pioneered and is really, I believe, one of the leader in this area, is in which genetic mutations or single nucleotide polymorphisms, what does your genetic profile look like with regard to these processes? So what would your tendencies or propensities be? There's no reference person, and it doesn't mean that if you have challenges in one area or one gear moves more slowly, it doesn't mean that you're broken or that you... that you're doomed to being autistic. For instance, the methylation profile of me and my family and Ethan is actually more impaired or more severe than some people that we know whose children are much more severe. So all those, the genetics, the nutrition, the environment, the toxin assaults, viral, those all play a role. So taking a look at monitoring the biochemistry, seeing here's what your genotype looks like, here's what we'd expect to see, what measuring that, saying, well, what are we seeing? And then supplementing, as you were mentioning with the green sheet, of what can you do, what foods can you eat to help balance the neurotransmitters, for instance, which is very similar to what I've heard you speaking about with bio diet, or which B vitamins should you support? Where are the weaknesses? How can we support that to help your body become more in balance? And Amy's fundamental operating principle is just so basic. It's that as you get those gears moving and get those processes functioning, then it will start to take care of itself. As it starts to work better, it can start to myelinate the nerves. It can start to get rid of these heavy metals that have been accumulating because you're not, the gears aren't moving and they're just piling up because we're exposed to them. So, as you go through that process, which is a lengthy one, you start to see things changing.
So Ethan is getting better?
Ethan is doing well and getting better, and we feel that, I mean, we know that if we, you know, the diet that we, his dietary restrictions today, many of the doctors would tell us we shouldn't even be doing that, or that we should only be doing a fraction of those things. I mean, he's anaphylactic to peanuts, so they would say, okay, don't do the peanuts, you know, as well as the milk. But many of the other things that we see that are a burden on the immune system, I lost my train of thought. So
things are a burden on the immune system.
Yeah,
he's
doing well. We know that if we weren't, things are going great, but we're running on the treadmill pretty hard to keep it that way.
Must be very time and resource consuming for you as parents.
Yes, especially Andrea wants to make sure I mention the food allergies because they are, you know, that's a component. A lot of the autistic kids do have that. Unfortunately, in the autistic case, a lot of the parents don't recognize them. So in Ethan's case, and some kids have differing levels of severity, but for instance, the first time, you know, when you're a parent and you hear for the first time someone say to you, you should avoid all wheat and dairy, the first reaction almost universally is, okay, that's crazy and I can never do that. Because
there's no food left.
Yeah, because everything, you know, if you go to the supermarket and you pick up a box, it's got those things in it. In Ethan's case, you know, he can't have a lot of other things too. You know, no eggs, no wheat, soy, very little soy, and there's a big list. But so,
well, they culture the vaccine on eggs,
yes,
and milk and wheat, and I think,
yes,
because these viruses that they're injecting as vaccinations are very intelligent, they build up immunities to those things, and then they're injected in your kid, and it makes your kid allergic. But
yes,
that's my take on it.
We can't say that we don't know what the causal relationship is there in Ethan's case, but we don't know that for sure. But we don't feel that we feel pretty sure that the vaccines didn't help anything, and that they were most likely a contributor, to our problems. And so for us, we felt that the potential benefit was, the risk far outweighed the what we perceived as the benefit.
That was very politically correct, Chris, to say it that way. Ask your wife if there's any cookbooks that she could recommend.
Yes. Yes. Right? Yep. She has quite a list and is more than happy to share them with any and everyone.
Chris, is there a way people could get in touch with you if they wanted help with their children?
Yes, you can. You can email me at chris@resonatinghealth.com.
Is it C-H-R-I-S?
C-H-R-I-S.
Okay. And how can they get in touch with Dr. Amy?
Dr. Amy is, as I mentioned, she's a pioneer in this research, but she's also pioneering the way that she's working with people, because she used to have a private practice, and people would go to see her in Maine, which is where she's located today, and she, but she realized that she really wasn't going to be able to help that many people, or as many people as you know, need to be helped on that one-to-one basis. So today what she does is she works with people remotely, both via the Internet, where she has a forum. Her website is Holistic Health, H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C-H-E-A-L-T-H, holistichealth.com. And there's a link to her forum from there. And that's a repository of questions and answers. She donates her time each week to answering a certain number of new questions. And so there's a growing database of questions and answers there. And then we do the testing in that we order the tests, and they come in the mail, and we collect the sample and send them to the lab. And the lab emails the results to Amy, and she reviews those and sends us the results along with her comments. So she's not replacing a local doctor or someone that is, you know, monitoring the overall health or if there's an emergency or anything like that. But your ideal situation is a doctor that that is open to this or is interested in it.
Now, about 4 years ago, when we started looking at autism and reading the literature, I don't remember seeing anything on methylation. Is this a new concept?
Well, I don't believe it's a new concept, and today there are a lot of people looking at it. Amy is not unique in singling it out, so there's growing recognition in this area, including by the pharmaceutical industry. There's a lot of money, my understanding, by the pharmaceutical industry now going into trying to patent, trying to come up with substances that work, alter them to make them patentable, into a drug. So it's a very hot area because people are realizing that, while the genes are a component, as I've heard you say, Sherry, that the expression of those genes and regulating that expression through RNA, for instance, which is an area where Amy's working also, is really a very powerful, perhaps more powerful than what that DNA is.
When you came to class and you brought us this information, we were just astounded at the complexity of it, but really intrigued at the same time, because we had done studies showing that, right, it's not really the genes, but the expression through the proteins and the receptors in the body to those proteins from a gene. So we were fascinated and took your information and made a computer program out of it, so that we can test other kids who are going through things like this. It's very, very new. Have you used it with Ethan yet? Or do you have your program yet?
No, I don't. I don't have it yet. I'm waiting.
Okay. Did we use it when you were up here on one of our computers? Did we run his vocal sample through any of our computer programs for vaccination risk?
Yes. Yes.
And did autism genes show up? What happened?
Yes, there was one.
Okay, and one of the things that people have said to me when we've been talking about this is that something called SAMe, S-A-M and then a little E,
mm-hmm.
and MSM and glutamine,
mm-hmm.
those three nutrients are very, very helpful. Did you find any of those in stress in Ethan's chart?
No,
not really.
We monitor those and we're supplementing those. So we're monitoring, we do supplement with SAMe, So, like, for instance, what Amy sees is that some people need a lot of methyl donors because they're using them up. COMT, catecholamine O-methyltransferase might be upregulated, so it's breaking down dopamine quickly using those methyl groups. And other kids are moving more slowly. They're not using as many. So you're kind of looking at that, balancing that, seeing how things are functioning. And we do supplement with SAMe. Sulfur for us can be an issue. So we kind of monitor what the total sulfur intake is. And
we need to can we take a little break here and give people a number that they can call in and talk to you live?
That'd be
Heather,
great.
Do you have those numbers?
Yeah, sure do. Okay, if you're in USA or Canada, call in at 1-888-228-4494. Worldwide, feel free to call at 877-489-6350. Or if you can't get through on those two lines, try the direct line, number 3-530-776-5154.
Okay, two other ways you can get in touch with us is to go to bbsradio.com. The numbers are listed there. We're on station 2, and a lot of our listeners like to write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. You know, this has been a hot topic, not methylation, but vaccinations. This has been a
yes.
hot topic in the news, and there's a lot of political hocus-pocus around.
Yes.
There was a recent case where the government conceded an autism case in federal court. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, and that's great to talk about that for a minute. Really, and I'll just start off by saying I think that we're at an inflection point right now, as of last night, in that over the last year, April a year ago, there was a show on Oprah, and that was a woman, Katie Wright, whose son was the reason that Autism Speaks, which is the largest charity today. They're kind of a blockbuster charity. It was her father was the chairman of was a vice chairman at GE and the president or the head of NBC Studios. And so Katie was on Oprah, and was there up until that point there was some prohibition, or there was a lot of issue or reasons people didn't want, you couldn't say the word vaccines and autism on TV. It was, let alone talk about it, couldn't say it. And a doctor in the audience asked a question, and Oprah let Katie respond. And she mentioned autism and these immune issues and food allergies and asthma. And because the CDC says that it's been scientifically proven that there's no link over many studies, and we just need to move on. So that was a year ago, and at that point, everybody in the autism community, all the moms, were just ecstatic. The message boards were going for days after that about that it was so great that Katie did that, and it took so much courage, and everybody felt like they had a voice, like their voice, what they would say was expressed, and after many years of just silence and repression, and in many cases being intimidated by your pediatrician or berated for your hesitancy to continue with vaccinations. And then last year, around maybe September or October, the next big event that kind of happened on the media front was a celebrity named Jenny McCarthy came out with her son's story that he was diagnosed with autism and had seizures and these issues, and she found the Dan community and this approach of addressing the body's problems, the health of the body, and working to recover her son, who today is is basically recovered and lost that diagnosis. Still has some issues, but lost the diagnosis and doing very well. And so it's her mission to really push this issue in the media, and she says she's not going to stop until she's in front of Congress. And she went on Oprah and Larry King and a few other shows and at that time. And the Oprah Show and the Larry King Show were very good. Oprah and Larry King, out of the shows that she went on, were very good. They had a great dialogue, and they asked her good questions and allowed her to answer. And that was the first time that we had on TV someone saying that she believed in her case that the vaccines did, cause her son's autism or contribute to it, were a negative factor, and that when you looked at the mercury and the aluminum and the formaldehyde and these things in the vaccines, that we needed to clean them up, and pointing out that not that many years ago, a short number of years ago, we used to have like 10 vaccines, and today we have 36 vaccines. So the schedule of those vaccinations is also a big factor, that, you know, when you're doing the MMR, for instance, you're injecting three live viruses, and it's three at once. So if your immune system is under the weather for some reason, and then you've got not only one virus that's coming at you, but three of them. So looking at that change, and is there a correlation with that, and the amount of, you know, what that assault is, here locally we hear that, we have chickenpox vaccinations, and then the schools are saying, well, we need another one because the kids are still getting the chickenpox. So it just seems like it's a continual increase in these things. So then last night, Larry King, I guess it was either National Autism Day or World Autism Day, Autism Speaks has been helping in that area to raise awareness and have those kind of get those kind of days. And it was Jenny McCarthy and David Kirby, who was a reporter who wrote the book Evidence of Harm a few years ago. And the reason that he wrote that book, I mean, this is interesting because he did not have a child with autism. But from what he said, my understanding is that at the last minute, language was inserted into a bill in the legislature to provide indemnity or, you know, immunity from lawsuits for all vaccine manufacturers, for all vaccines. And this was a Homeland Security bill and bioterrorism. And he just thought, well, that looks like there might be a story there. Why would it be this blanket thing for all vaccines and not specifically the, you know, these things for bioterrorism? And why would that be slipped in at the last minute like that? And so that's what, when he started investigating that, he did get a story, but he never expected to be writing a book about autism, profiling families, where, you know, like Katie Wright, this whose son was the genesis of Autism Speaks, she said when she saw that, you know, family after family, they see the same story. You know, X number of years later, the whole subclass of people have this regressive autism where they had 10, 20, 50 words. The kid was developing normally. They have home videos showing that. And then after their shots, they stop speaking and start moving backward. So he was on, and as you mentioned, Hannah Poling was in the news recently, that they conceded a case. It didn't go to trial. And one of the things that first caught my attention about this case was that her father, the girl's father, is a neurologist, and the mother is an attorney and an RN. So they seem like they would be in a very good position to document their case.
Yes.
So that was conceded. Now, the viewpoint expressed from the CDC is that she has a rare mitochondrial disorder, which was exacerbated by the vaccination, and, you know, along with all the other standard information, the line, you know, that they say is that, well, that's a rare genetic disorder that this person had, but, you know, for everybody else, these vaccines are very beneficial. My understanding is that there's no data which shows that was a pre-existing condition, and in fact, the genetic propensities or maybe weaknesses, you might call them, with that mitochondrial functioning could be in as high as 60% of the population. And I believe there are studies which show that mercury toxicity and exposure can actually induce mitochondrial dysfunction. So
we've seen it in the cases that we've done, certainly here. You know, they've gone to great lengths to keep people quiet and not even allow them to talk about this. Why do you think they allowed this case to come out? Because the mother was a lawyer?
Well, I'm not sure because, like you said, initially they were saying or I was hearing that this was the first case, and then we learned that no, there have been other cases, but they just didn't talk about it. Maybe they didn't want to talk about it. Maybe they agreed to not talk about it. In this case, I believe the Pollings, you know, did not want to. They wanted to talk about it. They wanted to provide that feedback to the community. I think that today there is growing awareness and a more unified, community. The internet has enabled people to group together. You know, many of the pediatricians didn't have that background or feedback. There are thousands of these kids, but for instance, with the vaccine case, Hannah Poling's parents said, well, their child's reaction was not reported. You know, there is a reporting system there's a vaccine injury fund, and there's a vaccine, you're supposed to report the doctors are supposed to report those incidences. And Hannah Poling's case was not reported. And so many of them aren't reported because if you're not even acknowledging or watching that, say, you know, admitting that there is an issue, then you're not even reporting it.
I wonder how dumb they think we are that on the one hand they're saying there's no damage, and on the other hand they're saying, well, here's the Division of Vaccine Injury Compensation. If your child is damaged, we'll pay you.
Yes.
I mean, I find that incongruous.
Yes, the things that so last night on Larry King they had Jenny and David Kirby and a doctor. The Defeat in Autism Now doctor that works with these kids, and the head of the American, is it Association of Pediatrics, and another pediatrician. I believe he was a pediatrician. And I really think this was the inflection point, because this was the first time where we heard these standard lines being said, and I could see in the faces of those people representing this established view, I can see for the first time that their recognition that this is not working. I can't just say this and people are going away. And you see sort of that fear or that recognition that something's changing. Because there are so many kids, it's affecting so many people. And Jenny in particular is a few weeks ago she was in the media urging everybody to call the White House and ask for Julie Gerberding's resignation. Gerberding is the head of the CDC.
And I just lost my train of thought. In David Kirby's book, Evidence of Harm, he has incredible evidence of cover-ups by drug companies. I mean, he's a reporter. This is not slanted. This is just factual information. I found it very compelling, and I gave it to my daughter, and she decided not to have her children vaccinated, and she gave it to her sister and sister-in-law. And once people see the evidence, there's no turning back and say, okay, pump my kid full of toxins and poisons. Help me kill them earlier. This is crazy.
Right. Yes. Yes, and so today even... people like Jenny and an organization called Generation Rescue, they aren't standing up and with a completely radical view of saying discontinue everything, but they're saying, why aren't we acknowledging what's going on? So today there's barely an acknowledgement that there's even a problem, and yet it's becoming the number one or two epidemics in the country. So we need to acknowledge there's a problem. They need to start researching this, looking at these issues. There's real resistance to even looking at these things or even considering these things so far. So it really seems to me though that we are at an inflection point and it's really moving very quickly. So I'm very encouraged by that.
Do you think the drug companies that are making the vaccinations are making such a very large profit they don't want to give that up, or is there some other kind of weird reason this is going on that people want to sweep it under the rug and say these kids' problems don't exist?
Well, I don't have any personal experience in that area, so I don't know for sure. the doctor who was the president, I believe, of the American Pediatric Association last night, I felt that his heart was, he had a good heart. I don't believe he has evil intent to, working with the kids. And he pointed out that, the vaccines, he's had three cases where children died from diseases that they do vaccinate for today. So he was saying, in his experience, and that was a benefit, vaccinating, you're not having that case. He said he has not reported a case to the Vaccine Injury Compensation Fund. So he was saying if we're going to change the schedule, we need evidence to do that, to show it's beneficial. And what I don't understand is that there seems to be a double standard in that, why wouldn't you investigate that? They're not acknowledging all of the kids out there that there is a problem right now, today. There's not a risk of a problem. There's a problem that there's thousands of kids and more every year, and the rate is growing so much. And I just lost my train of thought. So, but on one hand, my coworker here in a small company has a daughter who's severely autistic, seizures, big problem with seizures, and she's been doing these things over the last couple years, and she now when she was I think four approximately, she was prescribed Risperdal. Which is a very strong medication, and that was done off-label. And my understanding of off-label is that it means that we don't really know, we haven't studied this. We don't know if it's safe. We know there are dangerous side effects with this drug, if you take it for a while, and yet we're willing to give it to you anyway. We're going to give it to you anyway. And I think that's, under full disclosure, I think that's I'm okay with that, but how can we do that those kind of things and then not investigate other areas or tell people that that things like changing your diet are a waste of time and don't even investigate that?
Well, from personal experience, I know that's crazy. I have had two autistic grandchildren from allergies to milk, and we've been investigating milk for many years, and we had an appointment today with a 35-year-old autistic man, and from his vocal print, it just opened a whole new world to us, because we do the math, and one and one is always two, and that led us to this, and that led us to this, and this math led us to that, and we have discovered an enzyme that deals with using the proteins from milk, and we finally found the 11 different, maybe there's 13 different varieties of milk from different kind of cows, and we broke down the genes, and at the 47th amino acid, there was the change. We don't know what's made that happen, mm-hmm. but Chris, today we created a new database for people who were allergic to milk, and just following the numbers, I would love to run Ethan through it.
Yes.
It was incredible today when we gave this 35-year-old man who didn't have many language skills, kept his head down and kind of mumbled, like that, and to see him perk up and start talking about a movie he had just seen. We're astounded. Oh, we have to go. Okay, Chris, thank you for being with us. Don has just broken in and told us we're out of time. This has been so interesting. I just didn't watch the time, so I'm sorry. Chris, we'll have you back again to talk with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We do have a couple of questions from the audience about the papillomavirus, so we'll try to talk about that later, okay? And we're going to go off with another song by Martinet.
Everything's gonna be alright. Yeah, my mama told me everything's gonna be alright.
be all right.